Evening, everybody.
Recording in progress.
Nice to see you all again. Really nice. I'm very, very happy to be here. I was also able to be at the ceremony yesterday for Mahaprajapati. Which was really lovely. Thanks to Chris and John for creating that. And it was really terrific. Marie from Tucson was the chant leader. And I think Steve was the Doan. And it was really great to honor, as we will do every year from now on, unless we space out and forget, Mahaprajapati, first Buddhist nun. I've been practicing lately a Jewish prayer. I've been saying this very fervently every day. I'll give you an approximate English translation of this brief prayer. It goes like this: Blessed are you, O Lord our God, who in your wisdom created us with many, 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 many hollows and many, 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 many tubes. And if even one of them should rupture or be blocked, we would not be able to stand in your sacred presence. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, who heals and produces miracles. This prayer is said toward the beginning of morning service every day in the Jewish liturgy. It's also said when you come out of the bathroom. I've been practicing this prayer with great passion, you know, for several weeks now. During which, as you know, I've been having a little bit of a rough time, which began, I don't remember now, it's 3 weeks maybe, almost. I was in tremendous pain. Through my own stupidity, I did not just cart myself off to the, have Kathy, because I couldn't do it, cart me off to the emergency room. I waited a long time till I could talk to a doctor who said to me, you know what, go to the emergency room. So I did, because I was completely blocked. My urinary tract was not functioning. And it's very a painful thing. It got increasingly painful. And so they have it. This is actually a common thing. It was new to me, but it's actually quite common among old men who have enlarged prostate glands. And they shove a catheter in your urethra, and they drain the whole business, and you immediately feel better, but now you have a catheter that is uncomfortable, and you have to deal with this. And then I got an infection, so then I was kind of sick on top of that. In the meantime, this happened 2 days before all our children and grandchildren were coming to visit us, so I soldiered on, and I was able to spend a lot of good time with my children and grandchildren, and I had an excellent excuse to take time off and lay down in bed and rest a bit and read, which I did do. And after they left, my fever spiked, and I realized I was actually pretty sick. So then I got the antibiotics. Amazing. You can take the antibiotics, your fever goes away, your infection goes away. And then the next thing was, after 2 whole weeks, the catheter went away, and they put me on medication that would supposedly prevent this from happening. So I'm a happy person. All my tubes and hollows function at the moment. And I am thankful for the divine healing powers and miracles. Thank you for your chanting and your many expressions of well wishes toward me. I'm a really lucky person. This is a very commonplace thing. It's not life-threatening. And I have another appointment with the doctor to figure out what we do going forward. But so far, I'm okay. I just thought I'd let you know so that it wasn't a mystery. Also, I'm really grateful to Sue and Jeff for taking care of the all-day sitting. That was already planned because I was going to be joyfully with my grandchildren then anyway. As it turned out, I was a little miserably with my grandchildren. Oh, I should say, by the way, that I was not suffering during this time because for two reasons. Number one, I have an amazing partner who took care of me like nobody's business. She's a saint, my wife, Kathy. So I was not uncomfortable. I had everything I needed. Plus, I could read for hours. I had an excuse. I could read for hours and hours. I read giant books, one after the other, which usually I don't quite have time to do. So I was actually pretty happy, the truth be told, being sick. Anyway, as I was saying, I was already going to not be at the sitting, so thanks to Sue and Jeff for taking care of that. And they did a great job. I listened to their talks. They were seamlessly connected to each other, both talking about the same koan. And also grateful to Sue for, at rather the last minute, stepping in for seminar last week, because up until the last minute I was hoping to be able to come to seminar, but I just realized, I'm just too sick. You know, I don't need to be sick with all of you. So she gave a great talk, I thought, on the Fox Koan and also on Dogen's fascicle on karma in the three times. And I especially liked the end of her talk when she said that she doesn't really believe in past and future lives. And she even suspected that maybe the Buddhists only made that stuff up so that the karma equation would come out right. She said that. But then she said that despite this possibly cynical view, she does really have faith. That she said was not like a leap of faith, but born from her practice experience. She does really have faith in the truth that good actions produce good results and bad actions produce bad results, and that it is absolutely a good thing to do good. And that was very moving, you know, when she said that at the very end, I thought, because it is so true to who Sue is and has been all her life. So that was really good. So it was worth my not being there to be able to hear that. So I'm going to say just a word about the Fox Koan, and I won't repeat the story and all of that, but just a word about it. So one idea is the enlightened person is free from karma. The opposite idea, the other idea, which seems like the only other possibility, is that the enlightened person is not free of karma. That's the crux of the koan. However, no matter how you translate or interpret the answer that Baijiang gives in the koan, and there's different little tweaks of translation, some of them say the enlightened person is not obscured by causality. Some of them say the enlightened person is not ignorant of causality. Some of them say the enlightened person does not avoid causality. However you translate the probably ambiguous Chinese characters, I think the sense of it is that actually there's a third option beyond free of or not free of causality. I think what Baijiang in the story is saying is that the enlightened person is both free of and not free of causality. Both free of and not free of. And that's the crux of the koan. What does it mean to be free of and not free of causality? And since we know from our study of Dogen over all these years that to Dogen, we are all enlightened persons, even though we know we're not enlightened persons. We're all enlightened persons, So in other words, this koan is not a theoretical question about enlightened persons, right? It's a question about how we live and how we understand our lives. That's what this case is about. So to go into it further, I want to take up another one of the Shobo Genzo fascicles that we're looking at this month. It's called Refrain from Unwholesome Action. It's Shobo Genzo fascicle 11 in the Tanahashi edition. As you know, there are different editions of Shobo Genzo's. The numbers don't always match, but this one is number 11 in that version. Maybe you've noticed that Dogen's essays in Shobo Genzo usually center around a particular Zen story. Sometimes he tells you the story in the beginning, but often, as in this case, he doesn't introduce it until toward the end. Because in the beginning, he wants to say some things to put that story in context. And he says a bunch of things, and then he shows you the story. But I'll give you the story in the beginning, and then we'll come back around to it as we read through the fascicle. It's a really famous story. I'm sure you've heard it before. You might not know that it's about a Bao Zhuyi, who is one of the greatest poets in the history of Chinese letters. And Bao Zhuyi, like a lot of Tang Dynasty poets, was a student of Dharma. So here's a story about him. And this is from the fascicle. Bao Zhuyi of the Tang Dynasty was the lay student of Ruman, Zen master Fuguang, and a Dharma descendant of Matsu, Zen master Daji of Jiangxi. When he, Bai Zhuyi, was governor of Hong province, because a lot of the Chinese poets were government officials, and he was governor of Hong province. At that time, he was studying with Zen master Daolin. And one day, Zhuyi said to Daolin, "What's the essential meaning of Buddha Dharma?" And Daolin said, "Refrain from unwholesome action, do wholesome action." And Zhuyi said, "Well, even a three-year-old child knows that." And Daolin said, "A three-year-old child may know it, but even an 80-year-old person can't practice it." And Zhuyi bowed in gratitude and left. So in this essay, Dogen is concerned about the deepest meaning of precepts, of conduct. In other words, of causality, of karma. And in the story, of course, we're referencing the first two of the three pure precepts. Avoid unwholesome conduct, do good conduct, you know, basic stuff. Bai Zhuyi is a poet and a profound person. He wants deep metaphysical teachings. He's not asking about the ABCs of Buddhist moral conduct. So he's not too impressed with Daolin's answer. But Dogen is going to tell us in this fascicle that Bai Zhuyi really is missing the point. He's going to tell us in this fascicle that what looks to us and to Bai Zhuyi like simple moral conduct actually is the enactment of the deepest truths about reality. These are one and the same. So now I start at the beginning of the fascicle. Dogen writes, "Ancient Buddhas say, refrain from unwholesome action, do wholesome action, purify your own mind. This is the teaching of all the Buddhas." He then says, "This teaching has been authentically transmitted from earlier Buddhas to later Buddhas of the future, as the seven original Buddhas' general precepts in the ancestral school. Later Buddhas received these precepts from earlier Buddhas. This teaching is not limited to the seven original Buddhas. It is the teaching of all Buddhas. Thoroughly investigate this point. This Dharma way of the seven original Buddhas is always the Dharma way of the seven original Buddhas. Transmitting and receiving these precepts is a mutual activity. It goes back and forth between the Buddhas and us. This is the teaching of all Buddhas. The teaching, practice, and enlightenment of hundreds, thousands, and myriads of Buddhas. So here he's, you know, stating this very simple moral rule, and then he says, don't think this is a simple thing. This has a big pedigree. You know, all the Buddhas of the past, even before Shakyamuni Buddha, were teaching this. It's not just some simple idea about morality. It's the eternal teachings of the Buddha. They are awesome teachings, and we should really respect them. That's what he's trying to get us to see. Then he says, unwholesome action is the manifestation of one of the three natures. The wholesome action nature, the unwholesome action nature, and the neutral nature. The unwholesome action nature is unborn, just as the wholesome action nature and the neutral nature are unborn. These three natures are non-defiled, and they are reality. What? Right away, it's a little startling, right? It's a little startling. What is he saying? I mean, to us, it's perfectly clear. Unwholesome action is, you know, bad, shoddy conduct. Good action is good conduct. But here he's saying that fundamentally, both of these are just different aspects of true reality. As such, both wholesome action and unwholesome action are equally undefiled, equally pure. Which seems so bizarre. But that's what he says. So it certainly brings you up short, right? But then he says, well, but actually there is some difference, yes. He says, yes, these three natures are manifested in different ways. They're fundamentally the same, but they're manifested in different ways. As for unwholesome action in this world and unwholesome action in other worlds, because there's lots of worlds, are sometimes the same and sometimes different. Unwholesome action in former times and unwholesome action in the present time are sometimes the same and sometimes different. Unwholesome action in the Deva world and unwholesome action in the human world are sometimes the same and sometimes different. In a way, this is like strikingly contemporary, you know? Wholesome and unwholesome, good and bad, what's right or what's wrong, is not always the same wherever you go, right? These are not absolute things. It depends. I mean, yes, they're absolute, as he said previously, but when they manifest themselves, they're relative. Morality is actually relative to circumstances, to place, to time, and so on. That's something that was horribly prohibited in the past is no longer prohibited in the present, right? We know that. Things change. Views change. It's different in different places, different in different times, different with different people. Have you noticed we don't all agree on what's right and wrong? Some people think that something that's a given human right is a sin, you know? So, yeah, Dogen seemed to be appreciative of that. And then he says, furthermore, there's a great difference between the Buddha way and the worldly realm in what is called unwholesome action, wholesome action, or neutral action. So it's not only relative to place and time in this world and in other worlds, it's also relative to whether we're in the ordinary world or the Buddha world. And then he says something that is even more surprising, I think, anyway. Maybe you don't think so, but it seems surprising to me. He says, wholesome action and unwholesome action are time. Time. He says this. Although time is neither wholesome action nor unwholesome action. Wholesome action and unwholesome action are dharma. Both of them are dharma, although dharma is neither wholesome action nor unwholesome action. As dharma is all-inclusive, unwholesome action is all-inclusive. As dharma is all-inclusive, wholesome action is also all-inclusive. I'm guessing that stuff like this did not come up in the precept study groups. Because, wow, you know, who would think such things? But it reminds me a little bit, when you think about it, it's the same locution, actually. And I'm sure Dogen had this in mind, as we found in Dongshan's poem, which we studied a little while ago. Remember when Dongshan writes, "He is me, but I am not him." It's just like saying, wholesome action and unwholesome action are time, but time is not them. All our actions, all the time in our living, because every moment we're always doing some action, right? Even if we're not doing anything, even if we're sleeping, there's something going on. Just being alive is already some form of action all the time. All our actions, every moment of our living, Dogen is telling us, that's what time is. That is what existence is. And Dogen is saying, that's also what dharma is. That's the he is me part. However, that being true does not mean that we are immune to the consequences of our actions. That doesn't mean that we don't have to take care of our conduct. This is the he is me, this is the I am not him part. In other words, for all of us, we could make the statement, I am Buddha, so everything that I do is Buddha. That's really true for all of us. However, if we go around thinking that, we're stupid. Because actually, you're just you. And I'm just me. And we all have to take care of this life with the challenges that we have. We can't mess it up. I think that's what he's saying here. He goes on. When you listen, study, practice, and realize unsurpassable complete enlightenment, it is deep, vast, and wondrous. You learn this unsurpassable enlightenment either by following a teacher or by following a sutra. First, you understand it as refrain from unwholesome action. If you do not understand it as refrain from unwholesome action, it's not true Buddha Dharma. It's just the speech of demons. Know that to understand unsurpassable enlightenment as refrain from unwholesome action is the true Buddha Dharma. So here he's underscoring the point that I just made. Yes, you really have to practice ethical conduct. You can't somehow pretend that you can escape. And if you see somebody who looks like an enlightened Buddha, but they don't practice ethical conduct, then you can be sure that that's not a Buddha. But, on the other hand, we have to think twice about this, because, as we just learned a minute ago, you can't necessarily tell what is ethical conduct and what is not, because circumstances differ. There are different realms, different people. In other words, there's no place here for self-righteous judgment. We know what's right and wrong, and we can judge others. Refrain from unwholesome action. This is Dogen again. Refrain from unwholesome action. This is not what ordinary people first interpret it to mean. Although it may sound like it when we hear enlightenment expounded as a teaching of enlightenment. We understand it like that because it's an expression of unsurpassable enlightenment. It's the words of enlightenment. It's spoken enlightenment. And when we're moved by what is spoken and heard, this inspirational teaching of awakening, we then vow to refrain from unwholesome action, and we practice refraining from unwholesome action. So, in other words, we understand that this is not just about being a good person. It's good to be a good person, but that's not exactly, we're not trying to shape ourselves into being a good person. And also, we understand that the more we think about it, the more it's not so clear. What does it mean to be a good person? Does anybody really know? What does it mean, really, to refrain from unwholesome conduct? But because we're so inspired by the Dharma, we vow to practice refraining from unwholesome conduct anyway. And we do. When you do, he says, the power of practice is immediately actualized. This is actualized on the scale of the entire earth, the entire universe, all of time, and all dharmas. This is the scale of refrain from. This very person, at this very moment, abides in the place, comes from it, goes to it, where no unwholesome action is created. So, our simple... I mean, it's funny because refraining from an action is like, you know, not doing something. It's not doing something. You know? So to practice refraining from unwholesome action, a simple thing like that, he says, affects the whole universe. It is not this simple-minded thing. It's this vast thing. And he says, although the person appears to be faced with the conditions of creating unwholesome action or of associating with those who create unwholesome action, even so, no unwholesome action is created. In other words, if we are practicing the Dharma, even if it looks like we're creating unwholesome action, or it looks like we're hanging out with scoundrels and all sorts of bad people, no, that's not what's going on. He then says, when the power of refrain from is actualized, unwholesome action does not manifest as unwholesome action. Unwholesome action has no fixed form. You can pick it up, you can let it go. At the moment we understand this, we know that unwholesome action does not overcome a person, and a person does not destroy unwholesome action. Now we're beginning to get the idea here, as he goes on with this kind of very unusual sort of discussion, that there's a kind of spiritual superpower here in refraining from unwholesome action. It's much more than we thought it was. And by now, in the essay, you're beginning to hear this, I think. The phrase, refrain from, is starting to mean something other than what we think it means, you know? It seems as if now he's like little by little massaging this phrase, refrain from, and making it a synonym for the manifestation of awakening, which can operate effectively even when it appears that there's unwholesome action. So I guess what this says to me is I don't need to be so uptight, right, about my refraining from unwholesome action, because sometimes even if I mess up, I can be awakened by the unwholesome action, and therefore it's not unwholesome action. So it doesn't let me off the hook, but it means that I'm not picky, you know, about myself and my conduct. I'm not picky, and I'm not, you know, freaked out and upset by everything. I'm just living in the vitality and wonder and openness of being alive. And of course, knowing the difference between what's wholesome and unwholesome. Going on, when you arouse your entire mind and let it practice, and when you arouse your entire body and let it practice, 8 or 9 out of 10 are accomplished before the question and refrain from unwholesome action is actualized after the answer. In other words, just practicing and being intent on practicing, you are always doing this practice of refrain from. It's always absolutely a good thing. When you bring forth your body and mind in practice, and when you bring forth the body, mind, and practice of others, the power of practice with the four elements and the five skandhas is immediately actualized. Without defiling the self of the four elements and the five skandhas, the four elements and the five skandhas of today are practiced. The power of the four elements and the five skandhas practiced at this moment actualizes the practice of the four elements and the five skandhas in the past. So, four elements, five skandhas is the human body and all that's associated with it. The mind, the heart, emotions, thoughts. When you practice with your whole body and everything in your life, you know, not leaving something reserved like, now my practice is over here in this room, but the rest of the time I'm just me. No, no, the whole of your life. Engage with the practice. You redeem not only your poor physical body, which, as I'm here to tell you, doesn't always work perfectly and there's nothing you can do about it sometimes. You not only redeem that body made up of four elements and that mind made up of five skandhas, you redeem also and you wake up also the past. To me, this is one of the best things about Buddha's teaching. The most radical thing. You are not doomed to the bad effects of the past. We, as human beings, are not doomed to the bad effects of the past. When we awaken in the present, all of history awakens. This is what he's saying here. When you move mountains, rivers, and earth, as well as the sun, the moon, and stars to practice, they in return move you to practice. This is not the open eye of just one time, but the vital eye of all times. Because it is all the open eye, the vital eye of all times, you move all Buddhas and ancestors to practice, to listen to the teaching and to realize the fruit. Since all Buddhas and ancestors have not allowed the teaching, practice, and enlightenment to be divided, teaching, practice, and enlightenment have not hindered all Buddhas and ancestors. For this reason, when you move Buddhas and ancestors to practice, when you practice, you are moving the Buddhas and ancestors to practice. They're depending on you for their practice. When you do that, none of them are separated from before or after your realization, either in the past, present, or future. At the time when sentient beings like you and me become Buddhas and ancestors, they become Buddhas and ancestors without hindering the Buddhas and ancestors who already exist. Ponder this closely, he says. Think about this. While walking, sitting, standing, and lying down, all day long, ponder this. It is not that a sentient being is destroyed, taken away, or lost by becoming a Buddha ancestor, but a sentient being is dropped away. Well, this is a little breathless passage, very marvelous, and you know, Dogen is getting really excited. And he's painting a picture here using language that he, you know, is close to him, that he's spent his whole life immersing himself in. He's painting a picture of how immense and powerful our actual lives are, your life and my life, that sometimes we can be disappointed in, you know? He's saying, no, this is an immense and powerful thing. Not only extensively throughout space, as we move mountains, rivers, earth, sun, and stars, and are moved by them. Sometimes you look up at the sky and you really feel like you're being moved by them. Literally, we are moved by the sun, moon, and stars, and they by us. Not only space, but time. We are moving the Buddhas of the past right now, and they are moving us. This is so great, you know? And Dogen is really telling us that although we might seem like, wow, this sounds like a fantastically inspiring fantasy, what a great, you know, imagination Dogen has. He's trying to tell us, actually, no. No. This is not my imagination. What is imaginative and a projection of the imagination is our smallness, our limitations, our crabbed little lives. We have been brainwashed by causes and conditions into missing who and what we really are. This is what Dogen is telling us. And that's why he says, keep this in mind, sitting, walking, standing, lying down 24 hours a day. Keep contemplating this until you really know it. When I was sick, as I said, it was a great advantage, you know, to be able to read. And I read a book that I've been on my shelf for a long time, which I thought maybe like someday when I'm, you know, I don't know what, on a desert island, I'll read this book. It's a big, fat book. I knew I would never read it. But I got sick and I said, now's the time. I think the name of the book is Gene, G-E-N-E. By Siddhartha Mukherjee. It's a kind of a famous book. And I was thinking of Howard Fields when I was reading this. He's a great writer. He's a cancer doctor and a brilliant young scientist. And it's a story, somewhat historical and somewhat technical, about the history of our coming to understand the human genome and how genes work and so on and so forth. It is a staggering thing. Human genetic functioning, the complexity of it, and the interconnectedness of it, is staggeringly complex. And it's amazing what scientists have been able to figure out about it in just a few hundred years. But apparently, they barely have an idea. I thought, oh, they mapped the genome. Now they know everything about the genome. But mapping the genome doesn't mean that they know everything about the genome. It means that they have a way to start. It is so complex, and there's so many aspects to it. I mean, really and truly, a human being is unbelievable. You could never in a million years imagine such a creature. As a human being, how could there be even one human being, let alone how many billion of us. We have no idea how immense we are and how fabulous we are. It's amazing. I kind of got an inkling of that, you know, from reading Mukherjee. And I know that my friends who are, you know, serious scientists feel this wonder of the complexity of us. This last sentence in the paragraph, it's not that ascension being is destroyed, taken away, or lost by becoming a Buddha ancestor, but ascension being is dropped away. This tells us that when we realize that all this is true for us, when we can sense it, sense the wonder of our lives, we don't stop being who we are and suddenly appear like a glowing cosmic Buddha. We just remain exactly the same, but we drop away being ourselves. This phrase, drop away, is a sort of a catchphrase for Dogen. It's a really important phrase of Dogen's. Basically, what it means is we're no longer stuck on being ourselves. Being ourselves is no longer the problem for us that it has been. We're now free of the burden of ourselves. And we're free to be happy and really appreciate ourselves just the way we are and be amazed by our own genius and our own stupidity. I'm sometimes flabbergasted by the stupidity of my own thoughts. Sometimes I stand back in amazement, you know. Wow, I could be thinking that. That is so ridiculous, you know. It's amazing. He says, you allow the cause and effect of wholesome and unwholesome actions to practice. It is not that you put cause and effect into action, or that you create cause and effect, but cause and effect at times allows you to practice. The original face of cause and effect is already clear. Because this is dropping away, it is refrained from, unborn, impermanent, not ignoring, and dropping. What is he saying? He's saying that despite what we might believe, we don't really do our lives and shape our choices. When we practice, we learn how to simply get out of the way of life and allow life to live us. That happens anyway, but when we really let it happens more beautifully. And then we're free to let life live us, instead of us trying to use life to get what we want. It's much more interesting and satisfying to let life live you. Anyway, you can't use life to get what you want. It just doesn't work, as you find out time and time again, because it's impossible. And we keep trying, but it's impossible. Cause and effect, in other words, is not at all what we think it is. He says, cause and effect is itself refrained from. Right? Now the whole term becomes totally different. It's refrained from. And here when he says it's not ignoring, he's referring specifically to the fox koan. When Baijiang answers, an enlightened person does not ignore causality. Causality itself, as it really is itself beyond causality. The question of being free of or not free of is the wrong question. It doesn't make any sense as a question. Causality itself is beyond such a question, because causality itself is awakening. When you study in this way, Dogen says, you realize that unwholesome action is none other than refrained from. Unwholesome action itself is none other than refrained from. Unwholesome action itself is awakening. He goes on to say more about this. Assisted by this realization, you see through, and by sitting, you cut through refraining from unwholesome action. At the beginning, middle, and end, as refraining from unwholesome action is actualized, then unwholesome action does not arise through causes and conditions. It is just refrain from. Unwholesome action does not cease through causes and conditions. It is just refrain from. As unwholesome action is all-inclusive, all dharmas are all-inclusive. Those who only know that unwholesome action arises through causes and conditions and do not see that causes and conditions themselves are refrained from should be pitied, because Buddha seeds come forth through conditions. Conditions come forth through Buddha seeds. It is our human custom, futile though it may be, to make conditions be as we want them. Even when we want to push conditions around quite unselfishly, we want things to be better. We want things to be good for others. Even then, we're pushing things around. Even when we want Buddha conditions to prevail and suffering conditions to be gone. Dogen is saying that you have to practice with conditions as they are, whatever they are, because all conditions are Buddha seeds. In other words, don't really put yourself in a struggle with reality. It won't work. And anyway, you'll miss the fact that reality is always your best friend. Even like now, when things are so tough in the world, and there's so many good reasons to be full of anguish and complete disappointment at the conduct of human beings. You know, war is terrible. And there's nothing good to be said about it. And all the bad politics we've been seeing these last years and all the catastrophes looming in the present, in the future. This is a very upsetting time. No doubt about it. But Dogen's faith, believe me, Dogen saw plenty of stuff like that in his lifetime. He lived in very rough times with marauding bands of samurai killing people indiscriminately, raiding monasteries. He was not living in Shangri-La. He was aware of stuff like this. So he knows that stuff like this happens. But practice shows that it is otherwise than the way we think of it. Practice shows us possibility, always. And in all conditions, no matter what they are, a way to hold everything in a wide lens of all-inclusive compassion. It's hard to appreciate this, but I think it's really so important to realize that Dharma gives us a perspective that makes it possible for us to have happiness and joy and positive action no matter what. He goes on, it's not that unwholesome action does not exist, but it is just refrained from. It's not that unwholesome action does exist, it's just refrained from. Unwholesome action is not emptiness, but it is just refrain from. Unwholesome action is not form, but is just refrain from. Unwholesome action is not refrain from. It is just refrain from. So, this is not unusual expression for Dogen. And as always, with baffling passages like this, Dogen is playing, you know, on language as if it were a lute or a piano. And what does it amount to? He's saying, you know, look, don't get caught up in bright ideas. Even my Dogen brilliant bright ideas. Do not find yourself entangled in them. Be free of what I'm telling you. Everything always has to be dropped. Because there is nothing that holds still. And when you find yourself holding still to the thing that's already gone, you're a miserable person. Everything has to be dropped. Every moment comes with fresh views, fresh joys, and fresh sorrows and pains. We breathe in, we breathe out, it's a new world. Then he says, and I'm getting to the end here, I know it's, you're very patient, thank you. This is getting to the end. For example, not the end of the fascicle, but the end of what I'm going to say tonight. For example, a spring pine is neither existent nor existent. It is refrained from. You see how he's massaged this term. By now, it doesn't mean what we thought it meant in the beginning. It is refrained from. Autumn chrysanthemum is neither existent nor non-existent. It is refrained from. All Buddhas are neither existent nor non-existent. They are refrained from. Pillars, lanterns, whisk, and staff are neither existent nor non-existent. They are refrained from. Self is neither existent nor non-existent. It is refrained from. Studying in this way actualizes the fundamental point. The fundamental point is actualized. Investigate this through self, and investigate this through examination of the world. Again, this is another special term for Dogen. Kaz translates actualize the fundamental point. It's a translation of the word Genjo Koan, which is the title of the most famous of all Shobo Genzo fascicles, and it's a key phrase for Dogen. Basically, Genjo Koan means the arising moment after moment of new reality, new awakening, that can never be pinned down or grasped, but that always brings great joy and deeply moving appreciation. So, in the end, I think all this amounts to Dogen simply saying, it is so immense, it is so great, it is nearly impossible to fathom this precious human existence, this human consciousness that we have. And we're all on a great long journey, full of pathos, joys, sorrows, challenges, suffering, in which moment after moment we must respond in some way, and moment after moment we do respond in some way. And he's saying, when we practice and try our best, whatever way we respond, even if it's unwholesome action, it's always okay. It's always refrain from. Which, by now we see that refrain from is now totally a synonym for awakening. Anyway, nobody talks like Dogen, you know? There's nobody kind of quite has this perspective. in a way, when you think about it, it's not a big deal, you know. But his way of expressing it is so unique. I'm always surprised and appreciative of his expression. So we stop here for tonight. And again, I thank you for your great patience listening. You know, I keep my screen on gallery view when I'm talking, and if I see that a certain number of people on the gallery view are falling asleep and have left the room, then I know it's time to stop. But so far, everybody on my one screen anyway is still here. Thank you. I hope it wasn't too much. So let's, Jane will put us into groups, and let's talk about how you see all this. What's your take on causality, on the Fox koan? How do you see this phrase, refrain from now, that we've heard Dogen? And what about this issue of free of causality, not free of causality, and some third position? How does that work in your life or practice? How do you understand that or not understand that, or what questions do you have about it? So we'll do, I think we always do, groups of three, right? Groups of three and 4 minutes. I think we have time for 4 minutes for each person, and then a few minutes afterward for final comments, if there are any. So I'll say goodbye.
Recording stopped.
And see you in about 15 minutes or so. Thank you very much for listening. I really, really appreciate it.